Hard Feelings by Mark Coggins is a bang bang thrill ride, says best-selling author Seth Harwood, who adds that the lead character of Winnie is a female Jack Reacher. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 24, Reardon. "Those," I said, "aren't exactly the goodies I had in mind." "They don't even belong in the goody category," sneered Winnie. "Let's get the hell out of here. It looks like they are frozen in place, but that doesn't mean the electronics on their backs aren't transmitting. Some guy in a control room could be watching us right now." "No, the other backpacks had little blinking lights all over them. These must be shut down. Hold on a second. I want to try something." I leaned back into the van. I had noticed a toggle switch on the dashboard with a red protective cover, like some sort of missile launcher. Maybe it was the power switch for the backpacks, but I had an idea that it did something else. I flipped up the cover and pushed the toggle down to what I hoped was the off position. "Notice anything different?" I called out the door. "Yeah, they're groaning and squirming around. One guy just pissed himself. You switched off the signal controlling them, didn't you?" I hurried back to the rear. From what I could tell, there was more groaning than squirming. Their muscles had to be in knots from being held rigid for so long. "Help me undo the straps on the backpacks." "Do we need another conversation about mission?" asked Winnie. But nonetheless, she reached to unbuckle the straps on the nearest guy. "Freeing them is fine and dandy, but it doesn't do anything about the winemaker." "Don't jump to conclusions. This isn't entirely altruistic." I fumbled open the buckles at my guy's chest and hips, and then stood back, gripping the place I had been hit by the ricochet. Every movement felt like an ice pick in the ribs. "Go, man," I said. "Get away while you can." All he did was hug himself. "Maybe they don't speak English." "Vamos," I shouted, pulling him by the arms. I was pretty sure that meant let's go rather than get up, but it was the best I could do. Eventually, he tottered to his feet to join his friend, who Winnie had decanted with a more ruthless efficiency than I had. "You better not be taking them with us," she warned. "I'm not, but I am taking one of the packs." I worked the clicker on our SUV and yanked open the rear door. By the time I turned around, Winnie had already snatched up one of the packs, and now she flung it into the back and slammed the door shut. "Okay, you got your pack. What are we going to do about them?" I stepped in front of the guy Winnie had been wrangling. He was the one with the bladder control issues, but he seemed a lot steadier on his feet now. I took his hand and slapped the van keys into it. "Adios, amigo," I said, and then pointed to the van and made a steering motion like I was driving. He looked at me like I told him to grow wings and fly. Winnie elbowed me out of the way and slapped him none too gently on the cheek. She barked, "Escúchame," and then proceeded to unreel about three paragraphs of rapid-fire Spanish. He started nodding about halfway through, and when she broke off, he wobbled over to the driver's door to hoist himself behind the wheel. I offered him a hand up while Winnie gave the other guy the bum's rush into the passenger seat. We watched as they backed out of the parking lot, getting all the way into the middle of the road before they found the D on the gear shift. Then they lurched forward and boiled down the highway. A minute later, we gained the road ourselves, charting a circuitous route home to elude pursuers and avoid another marionette drive-by. We were still running without lights, but I risked a glance over in Winnie's direction. "I didn't know you could speak Spanish."
"Well, I can. It's pretty much a requirement if you hang around wineries. All the workers are from south of the border. Speaking of surprises, what's with the backpack? seems like a big old Trojan horse to me. What do you think you're going to do with it, except allow the winemaker to spy on us? It's not what I'm going to do with it. It's what Ray is going to do with it. It's time to call for Q. Winnie stared through the windshield into the darkness. I don't mind having him come up and join us, as long as he understands the risks. But I don't see what you expect him to do with the backpack. Take it apart. Understand how they work and how to defeat them. We'll never be able to sneak onto the property if we can't avoid detection by those zombie guards and the instruments they carry around. Who said anything about sneaking onto the property? When the time comes, I'm going to make damn sure they know I'm there. The operative phrase being, when the time comes. There are only two of us. We have to have the element of surprise. Maybe, but I don't like taking that thing back home. Even if it's not lit up like the others, it could still have some sort of geolocation tracker on it. If you believe that, then why did you help me load it into the SUV? She reached over to give my arm a squeeze. Because, lover boy, I didn't want to have an argument in the parking lot. I wanted to get the hell out of Dodge. Let's ditch it, now, before we turn back toward Calistoga. But, she squeezed my shoulder again, please. I found a wash along the highway next to a sign that read, No Dumping. There was already a camper shell, a box spring, and a refrigerator lying amid a field of other flotsam and jetsam. We pulled to a stop by the guardrail, and I stepped over. Winnie handed me the backpack, and I stuffed it through the door of the camper shell, nestling it among a sea of Bud and PBR empties. Back behind the wheel of the SUV, I wagged an index finger at Winnie. To be continued, I said. Winnie grinned, wrapped a hand around my finger, and gently pushed it down. I hate sequels. Ray arrived 2 days later at about 5 p.m. We had moved from the B&B to a cheaper motel at the other end of town. He wheeled into the parking lot in his 1987 Dodge Aries, the Chrysler K car he'd bought the year he retired from McDonnell Douglas, pulling a cigar-shaped trailer he'd made to haul around his model airplane junk. I saw him through the window of our room and stepped out into the breezeway that fronted the parking lot. What'd you bring that for? I asked, after he'd hoisted himself out of the car. Squinting at me, he brought a hand up to block the afternoon sun. Did you expect me to walk? I don't mean the funky car. I mean the funkier trailer.
I've got my reasons.
He paused.
Nice to see you, too.
Sorry, I said, and stepped out to shake his hand, gripping his bony elbow at the same time. It was good to see him. Thank you for coming. It means a lot to me. To us. He gave me a lopsided grin, pulling me closer to ask in the stage whisper,
Are you doing her yet?
I laughed and pushed him away. You don't need to whisper. She's at the gym.
Swell, but you didn't answer the question.
Let's just say we only have one room.
Ha! I knew it!
I spent the next hour filling him in on everything that had happened since we'd left Palm Springs. He merely grunted when I told him how his electronic countermeasures had helped at the brothel in Nevada City. It was the helicopter that drew the biggest reaction.
You're telling me you shot down a fucking helicopter?
Yeah. We were sipping watery coffee from the decrepit motel coffee maker. He was on the couch and I was balancing on two legs of the scratched desk chair. I brought the legs down with a bang. We thought the winemaker might be on it.
But he wasn't.
It wasn't really a question, but I answered anyway. No, he wasn't. Ray took a sip of coffee, frowning as he swallowed.
It's not really going to end until you kill him or he kills you.
I tried to make that clear on the phone, Ray. You don't have to do this. You can turn around and drive right back, and I won't think any less of you.
I heard what you said on the phone. I just didn't realize you meant it.
He shook his head.
I'm staying. As far as I can tell, you'd both be dead if it wasn't for me.
I laughed, eager to cut the tension.
That's almost certainly true. Thank you, Ray.
Now tell me about this instrument pack.
I explained about the zombie guards patrolling the winemaker's property and the packs they wore, and how they seemed to have detected Winnie and me in the dead of the night from at least 100 yards away. He nodded.
Could be radar. Could be infrared. Could be a lot of things.
I was describing the disagreement Winnie and I had about keeping one when she stepped through the door in a black Lycra half suit, fresh from her workout at the gym. Her face was flushed and her muscles pumped, but that only made her more attractive, like some kind of female superhero come to life. Ray stood awkwardly, staring at her with obvious carnal interest, almost exactly as he had the first time they met. A huge smile spread across Winnie's face, and she hurried over to wrap him in a hug.
It's good to see you, Ray. Thank you for coming.
He was as flushed as she was by the time she released him.
Now that's the sort of greeting I expected.
Your expectation has to do more with the greeter than the greeting, I said. It was close to dinner time, so we ordered Chinese delivery to limit the chances of being spotted by the winemaker's men. Sitting cross-legged around the motel coffee table, we feasted on Kung Pao chicken while Ray entertained us with a story about a prank he played on old Mrs. Crenshaw from our trailer park. But by the time we got down to the fortune cookies, I steered the conversation back to the disputed instrument pack.
Winnie's right,
pronounced Ray, once he understood the crux of the disagreement.
It almost certainly has some kind of geolocation device, and that device will almost certainly have a separate power supply from the main instruments. Think about it. They need to know where these guards are at all times, and they need to deal with the possibility of an intruder killing the guard and disabling the pack. They would need a way to determine where the downed guard is, so they would know where the breach took place. It would have been foolhardy to bring the pack back here without removing the geolocation tracker first. They would have been on you in hours.
Winnie held out her hand, palm up.
I rest my case.
But he's right, too, said Ray.
Come on, said Winnie. Now you're just trying to split the baby. We can't both be right.
Yet you are. You're right because he shouldn't have taken it without removing the tracker. He's right because you need to get your hands on one to understand what makes it tick. They've got a nearly perfect defense system, an unlimited supply of expendable zombie guards patrolling the ground with sophisticated detection electronics. You'll never get through if you can't subvert or disable them.
You know what I'm going to say next, I said.
Yes, I do, said Winnie, and I don't like it.
We have to go back to the one we ditched, have Ray defang it, and bring it back here.
That's what I thought.
You have been listening to No Hard Feelings, a finalist for the Forward Reviews Book of the Year Award. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.